The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
The extraordinary success of this mission. So we were ready when the Afghan security forces, after 2 decades of fighting for their country and losing thousands of their own, did not hold on as long as anyone expected. We were ready when they and the people of Afghanistan watched their own government collapse. This is the way the mission was designed. It was designed to operate under severe stress and attack. And that's what it did.
There you go. Everything was perfect. No even hinting at, we could have done a few things a little bit differently. If he did, it's the bad orange man's fault. But everything they did, we were ready. We were ready. This was not just a success. It was an extraordinary success. So says the illegitimate president of the United States, a man that 60%, I just now noticed on Rasmussen, 60% of Americans believe he should be impeached. 60%. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience. We're thankful, too, for our broadcast partner, CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on their platform. Takes the audio version of this live stream into 11 million homes in the United States. For the video version, though, you've got to come over to our website. It's provided exclusively at thetrumpet.com. thetrumpet.com/live takes you right to the live stream every day and also to the podcasts of this program that are posted a couple of hours after the show. Lots and lots to get to on today's program. So in the same speech, he's talking about just how successful it was, just how many lives they saved, and then simultaneously saying that all the problems, they're Donald Trump's fault. Donald Trump's the one. If you're upset about this mission, if you're upset about the fact that we left 10% of the Americans behind, if you're upset about these things, blame Donald Trump. But I mean, as far as our mission, we were ready. This is how it was designed. This is how it was designed from the beginning. It was always designed with, to operate under, as he said, stress. It was all, we anticipated everything perfectly, except maybe as he hinted there that that we didn't know the Afghan army was going to collapse as fast as it did. Meanwhile, you've got the Taliban. I mean, they're celebrating in the streets. They are the first night when the U.S. left. I didn't have time to play the footage yesterday, but the clip of all of them firing off their machine guns into the air. I think 2 Taliban officials died during the celebration. That's an aside, I suppose. But that's going on. They're having all these mock funerals with caskets that they're carrying around the city, the city of Kabul, I guess it is. Maybe it's from another city, but in any event, they're draped in U.S. flags, British flags, totally mocking the West. There's one Taliban official. He's quoted in the Times of London today. He says, "Never in our wildest dreams could we have believed we could beat a superpower like America with just our Kalashnikovs, just our machine guns, just our rifles, and we ran off the superpower." The United States of America. Never in our wildest dreams did we think this was possible. You think this is significant with respect to Bible prophecy, just like I was noting yesterday? I played you those clips from Herbert Armstrong, from my father. I read through some highlights from He Was Right. The Trumpet Magazine, tomorrow's news today. We told you right at the start, right as the U.S. was going into Afghanistan, that we would not win this war. We told you that. Time Magazine, and I saw an actual copy of it yesterday, Time Magazine said at the time, these are the last days of the Taliban. The Trumpet Magazine tomorrow's news today, the Telegraph's take on Joe Biden's speech yesterday. They said, this is in the UK. Again, it's important sometimes to see what the international media are saying. His position marked a departure from American foreign policy since 1945 and struck a warning for allies reliant on U.S. for help. The U.S. is no longer the world's policeman, in other words. So everything's changing. We're in that period now, after America. And they're going to be scrambling, our Western allies. They're going to be scrambling. And this is surely going to strengthen that alliance in Europe, that prophesied alliance, the seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. And Britain, of course, is not going to be a part of it. They're already on the outside looking in. That's prophesied too. So many prophecies aligning just perfectly with what has been prophesied or what has been the forecast for decades at the Plain Truth magazine during Mr. Armstrong's ministry. And now, of course, the Trumpet magazine. Listen to Joe Biden from yesterday saying he takes responsibility for everything, but that everything was just perfect. Clip 3.
I take responsibility for the decision. Now, some say we should have started mass evacuations sooner. And couldn't this have been done in a more orderly manner? I respectfully disagree. The bottom line is there is no evacuation from the end of a war that you can run without the kinds of complexities, challenges, and threats we faced. None.
Of course it was going to be chaotic. That's just the way evacuations go. We couldn't have done it any earlier. I disagree with those critics. I disagree with those who criticize this operation. This operation was an extraordinary success. This was the Berlin airlift. We got over 100,000 people out. That's I think he said that's almost double what many experts predicted. So they are popping the champagne bottles. They see this as not just a success, an extraordinary success. Listen again to Joe Biden yesterday, clip 4.
In fact, just yesterday, the United Nations Security Council passed a resolution that sent a clear message about the international community expects the Taliban to deliver on moving forward.
This has the Taliban shaking in their boots. The UN, they passed a resolution saying that they've got to provide safe passage for those Americans still stranded in Afghanistan. Come on. The United Nations? This is what he had to say yesterday about the deadline, the August 31 deadline, the promise that he kept to the Taliban, but the one that he broke with the American people. Clip number 5.
Leaving August the 31st is not due to an arbitrary deadline. It was designed to save American lives.
So he's actually saying that what they did didn't put American lives in danger. This saved lives. Getting out on Monday saved lives. I mean, they're proud of it. There's nothing to reconsider here. There's nothing that they could have done differently. There's nothing that they could have done better. Listen to this next montage. Here he is talking about the ones they got out and then the ones they left behind. Clip 1.
Since March, we reached out 19 times to Americans in Afghanistan with multiple warnings and offers to help them leave Afghanistan, all the way back as far as March. Our Operation Allied Rescue ended up getting more than 5,500 Americans out. Now we believe that about 100 to 200 Americans remain in Afghanistan with some intention to leave. The bottom line, 90% of Americans in Afghanistan who wanted to leave were able to leave.
And he sees that as acceptable, I guess. 90%. Hey, we got 90% out. We left 10%. I won't bog down in the weeds here with the percentages and the numbers, but if you got out 5,500 Americans, 10% should be about 5,600 left. In any event, he's saying one. The reality is they don't know. It just depends on if you go from one spokesman, whether it's from the Pentagon, the DOJ, whatever it is, the State Department, the White House, it could be 100. It could be the low hundreds. It could be 100 to 200. It could be a few hundred. It could be as many as 1,000. They don't know. They just don't know. But there he is saying 90% is good enough. Never forget about no American is left behind. Hey, if it's a, and furthermore, of the couple hundred still left there, we told them as early as March to get out. We were warning them. Oh, really? You were warning them in March, in April, in May, June, July? Because in looking at your speeches all through that period, I mean, you, judging by what you were telling the public on camera, everything was just fine. The Afghan army was strong. The Taliban would never take over. No wonder people stayed all the way. John Kirby, the spokesman for the Pentagon, he said the day before they were airlifted out of those embassies, yeah, everything's calm. It's calm and peaceful in Kabul. Right up until a day before, they had to evacuate people and burn the contents of the embassy. And now here's your fake president basically blaming the people that are left behind. He's blaming them. They didn't heed the warnings that we gave as early as March. They didn't get out. And then at the same time, he says, you know, some say we should have started the evacuation earlier. No, I disagree. Well, which is it? Which is it? Should it have happened in March? Should there have been a mass evacuation because of your warnings in March? Or should it have just been the 17 days, I guess it was? Listen, going back to that July 8th speech, and Sam looked up a speech from, I think it was April the 14th. Not a hint of a warning. Not a hint. Quite the contrary. Here's Joe Biden, and he's pressed because this is July 8th now, and reporters are seeing what's happening in Afghanistan. They're seeing the Taliban making great gains, and all the while the Pentagon kept saying, no, it's not happening that way. They're not making as many gains as you think that they are. And then here's reporters pressing Joe Biden, saying, hey, is this going to be another Saigon, a fall of Saigon? And well, listen to him in all of these exchanges. Clip 8.
Is a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan now inevitable?
No, it is not.
Your own intelligence community has assessed that the Afghan government will likely collapse.
That is not true.
Some Vietnamese veterans see echoes of their experience in this withdrawal in Afghanistan. Do you see any parallels between this withdrawal and what happened in Vietnam with some people feeling...
None whatsoever. Zero. There's going to be no circumstance where you see people being lifted off the roof of a embassy of the United States from Afghanistan. It is not at all comfortable. But the likelihood there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely.
So if you're an American living in Kabul and you hear that speech from July 8th, what are you going to think? You're going to think everything's fine. Okay, the U.S. troops are pulling out, but the Afghan army is going to be in control. There's a president here. He'll look after us. And then yesterday he comes out and says, look, we were warning you in March to get out. Why didn't you get out? Reuters had a big story last night. Another leak, by the way. The leaks, the Politico story we went through yesterday, the Washington Post revelation. We had negotiations with the Taliban over the city of Kabul, and we just gave it to the Taliban and thought, no, we'll just focus on the airport. That happened. And then you have this, another leak, a phone call, a not so perfect phone call at that. This was between Joe Biden and President Ghani, who fled the country just a couple weeks ago. But going back to this phone call, it happened on July 23rd. So what you heard, that clip there from Biden, that was from the July 8th speech. Then he had a phone call July 23rd, so a couple weeks later. And Reuters says the men spoke for roughly 14 minutes on July 23rd. On August 15th, Ghani fled the presidential palace and the Taliban entered Kabul. In much of the call, listen to this, Biden focused on what he called the Afghan government's perception problem. You're not giving off the right perception. It says here, I need not tell you the perception around the world and in parts of Afghanistan, I believe. This is Biden talking. I think Reuters got the transcript and the audio. So here's a phone. This never happens with a radical leftist Democrat unless there's some other communists that want him out. Now, you know all about that side of the story. That's happening. This is Obama's deep state. They are turning on Joe Biden. He's no longer useful. They just needed him to get into the White House. They just needed him to carry out this debacle in Afghanistan. They need him now to be the fall guy. 60% of Americans think he should be impeached? 60%? When are 60% of Americans ever in agreement? In much of the call, Biden focused on what he called the Afghan government's perception problem. I need not tell you the perception around the world and in parts of Afghanistan, I believe, is that things are not going well in terms of the fight against the Taliban, Biden said. Look, it looks like you're not doing well. It looks like the Taliban is sweeping across the country to victory. And then he says, and there is a need, whether it is true or not, there is a need to project a different picture. So look, we've got to create a narrative, whether it's true or not, we've got to create a narrative that the Taliban aren't winning and that you guys are in a position of strength. Now, where is the warning? Where is the war? If it started in March, if he's so concerned about the Americans, if he's so concerned about getting them out before they come into harm's way, why doesn't he mention that in this phone call? This is far from a perfect phone call. This phone call reveals the cover-up. They tried to cover it up that the Taliban was making the great gains that it was. And really, there came a tipping point. And going over to Obama, you know, the puppet master, he's sided firmly with the Taliban from the beginning. I mentioned yesterday the prisoner swap. Five Taliban chiefs for an American traitor, a deserter. Five Taliban generals who returned to the battlefield. And they were there orchestrating, whether in Qatar or Afghanistan, wherever they were part of the operation, the downfall of Kabul. And then you have General McKenzie and these other U.S. officials negotiating with the Taliban. Here's Joe Biden. July 8th, he tells the world, there's no problem here. There's nothing you can't compare this to Saigon at all. The Taliban are not going to take over. And then he says in this private phone call that somebody in the deep state leaked. He says, look, there's a perception here that the Taliban are winning. Now, you've got to make sure that you destroy that perception. We've got to create a narrative, whether it's true or false, doesn't matter. We've got to create a narrative here. I mean, this is Reuters. This is Reuters. This is not Fox News. This is astounding. It says Biden told Ghani that if Afghanistan's prominent political figures were to give a press conference together, backing a new military strategy, that will change perception and that will change an awful lot, I think. Look, you got to change this perception. It says the American leader's words indicated he didn't anticipate the massive insurrection and collapse to come 23 days later. Well, that's Reuters commentary. I'm not so sure about that. He knew what was happening. And he wanted President Ghani to create a false narrative. Doesn't matter if it's true. Just get up there, look tough, look like the Afghan army's in a strong position. More and more leaks. Somebody in Obama's deep state wants him out. You put it together, as I say, with the two stories that I covered yesterday, both of them based on not just one leak, lots of leaks. It's leaking. It's leaking like a sieve around the White House, the Pentagon, maybe not the White House, because you still have his, you still have this, the, well, I was going to say stooges, but that's what they are. I mean, John Kirby and these spokespeople just coming out with insane remarks. But maybe right around the White House, he still has people loyally defending him. But there's lots of leakers elsewhere. The New York Post, this is its story on this Reuters piece, says President Biden pressured Afghanistan President Ashraf Ghani to create the perception that the Taliban weren't winning, whether it's true or not. In a phone call just 3 weeks before the insurgents seized control of the country, a bombshell leaked transcript shows. You think he'll be impeached for this? Maybe he will be. I'm sure there's a lot of Americans calling, even Democrats, senators and congressmen, if 60% are demanding he be impeached or think that he should be. It says here, Biden's tone throughout the call suggests he did not expect the collapse of the Afghan government just 3 weeks later. Ghani fled as the Taliban seized control on August 15th. Well, we know about that. It says here, Afghans were killed in a suicide bombing at Kabul airport during the final days of Biden's chaotic mass evacuations that ended Monday. It was chaotic. Happened over the course of a couple of weeks. Wouldn't extend the deadline. Not even for 10% of Americans left stranded. Why were they left? Why did they stay? You listen to that speech yesterday, that shameful speech. As basically, he implies that it's your fault if you're still in Afghanistan. And he's supposedly an American. Instead of getting up there and saying, look, we're going to come after you. If there's any hint of persecution or violence aimed at American hostages, we're coming for you, believe me. He doesn't say that. What does he say? The UN had a resolution. There's hundreds of countries out there that support us. So the Taliban's going to behave. And then you have the National Security Advisor for his part saying, yeah, we'll send in the aid to the Taliban as long as they behave. In other words, if you give our people to us, if you make sure that they have a safe passage out, then in come the billions. It's already, as I've been saying, it's already a hostage crisis. They're just maybe not in jail cells yet. This is the point of strength that Jake Sullivan believes the United States is operating from. Listen to him yesterday talk about how they're going to get the money to the Afghan people that need it. And then also he's not ruling out the fact that, you know, we're considering even funding the Taliban, the 85 to 90 billion in military hardware. That's evidently not enough. We want to keep the money going into the Taliban coffers. It's mind-boggling. This is clip 9.
You say we're going to work with the Taliban. Does that include the prospect of giving them aid?
Well, first of all, we do believe that there is an important dimension of humanitarian assistance that should go directly to the people of Afghanistan. They need help with respect to health and food aid and other forms of subsistence, and we do intend to continue that. Secondly, when it comes to our economic and development assistance relationship with the Taliban, that will be about the Taliban's actions. It will be about whether they follow through on their commitments to safe passage for Americans and Afghan allies. It's going to be up to them. And we will wait and see by their actions how we end up responding in terms of the economic and development assistance.
So Secretary Blinken, he's saying that, yeah, we're gonna get the money to the ordinary Afghanis, and we'll use UN agencies. There's nothing could go wrong there. If you get the UN involved in distributing funding to the locals, there's never going to be any corruption with that. So they're definitely sending the money to the Afghan people. which of course will go into all of these deep pockets of these nefarious agents, UN officials. Those scandals are too long to even go through. But there's Jake Sullivan saying, we haven't even ruled out providing funding for the Taliban itself, the terrorist organization. This is unbelievable. Listen to the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby, saying that all of that $90 billion, they're already brandishing U.S. weapons, wearing U.S. uniforms, flying Black Hawk helicopters with dead people hanging from a noose. And here's John Kirby yesterday with his delusional reasoning that they're not really going to get much use out of everything that we left behind. Clip 6.
The other issue is, what did we turn over to the Afghan forces as we retrograded out of the country and what they did with it? And of course, we know that there's quite a bit of material in the batch that the Afghans had that the Taliban now have access to. There's no question about mm-hmm. that. But what I would tell you about this, Dan, is the kinds of equipment we're talking about, while certainly there's a lethality component to it, it doesn't pose a threat to the United States. It doesn't pose a threat to neighboring nations. I mean, these are not the kinds of things that the Taliban can make great strategic use out of.
Right. He's living in fantasy land. There's a lethal component, but, you know, they're really not going to get much use out of it. It certainly doesn't pose a danger. These weapons, these military weapons, well, the tanks and the planes and the guns and the grenade launchers and the bombs, it won't even pose a threat to the neighbors of Afghanistan. Never mind the United States. I mean, even the next door neighbors, nothing to worry about here. It's just the narrative, isn't it? It is no problem for them to come up with a false narrative, even when there are literal explosions or infernos right behind them on the camera shot. We've seen that thinking. This is the way a communist reasons. It doesn't matter what's actually happening on the ground. It doesn't matter that 200 people were blown to bits just a week ago. It was a success. It was an extraordinary success. The world, again, you step back and look at some of the reaction coming from overseas. The Telegraph today, the U.S. may struggle to recover from Joe Biden's weakness. It says, from every angle, Biden embodies America's weakness. His public statements mirror the country's fragile state, exhausted, incoherent, inward-looking, and no longer in control of events. It says, decades of sacrifice have been squandered in a matter of weeks. Decades of sacrifice squandered in just a few weeks, in just a few days. Yet it's as if Biden and his fans don't care or refuse to admit the scale of the disaster. He seems to have little to offer beyond his advisor's notes and comforting platitudes typed on auto-cue. But there are also ominous signs that this time, this is further on, it talks about how America's resilience often brings it back, and as we know, there's going to be a mini-resurgence still before the return of Christ. But he makes a good point. There's ominous signs that this time Biden's America may struggle to bounce back from the brink. Biden's Afghan catastrophe has already dashed America's international reputation. Whether American dynamism can survive his presidency is another matter. There's a story over at The Hill. In Afghanistan, we've opened the gates of hell. This is not going to end well for the United States, as this article brings out. Look, the war against terrorism, it's still going. It's raging. At least when you look at America's enemies. When you look at these Islamist fundamentalist organizations, they're still going strong. They still want to bring down the great Satan and the little Satan. It compares it to the worst strategic blunder since 1938 with Neville Chamberlain waving the peace paper or the paper saying that there'd be peace in our time. And The Hill is comparing that to where we are, to where the United States and the West is with respect to the war against terrorism. says here, President Joe Biden's debacle will have no such savior. I mean, he talked about Winston Churchill coming in at the last minute and saving the West. No such savior this time. The Islamic Jihad isn't that kind of war. Instead of getting us out of Afghanistan and bringing peace in our time, he's opened the gates of hell. In one disastrous and grossly ill-conceived strategic move, Biden has armed and empowered the Taliban and elated every Muslim fanatic from Morocco to Mindanao. I'm not sure where that is. And anyway, it says, not since 9/11 have events so galvanized our enemies, U.S. forces abandoning the field, the Afghan military laying down arms, and the Taliban reestablishing their Islamic emirate. Not since 9/11 have events so galvanized the enemies of the United States. It says 14 centuries of war between Islam and the West just got ramped up on steroids. The war continues. Holy wars, religious wars, they continue. It's been going on for centuries. This isn't the end of it. This is just the end of America's retreat. The war continues. You know, a lot of people wanted the United States out of Afghanistan. You look at the casualty count, 10,000 dead, 50,000 injured, as I've mentioned this week. All of the trillions and trillions of dollars that we've poured into that region, Afghanistan, Iraq. And what do we have to show for it? Well, not a lot, so we just got to get our boys home. They're dying. I think it's an interesting comparison when you look at the deaths of U.S. soldiers. 10,000 of them, that's a lot. But we didn't have another 9/11. Or at least we haven't to this point. There could have been, of course, a lot more gains if you just keep a couple powerful bases there in Iraq and Afghanistan. But I'll leave that aside. I guess just keep our focus on the prophetic significance of this. But to just address the casualty count for a moment, this is from the VAERS website. It was updated last Friday. They keep track of all of the reactions, in some cases deadly reactions to the vaccine. The Defender says this, VAERS data released Friday by the CDC showed a total of 623,000 reports of adverse events from all age groups following COVID vaccines, including 13,627 deaths and 84,466 serious injuries between December 14th and August. So in 8 months' time, we've had, at least this is all that's reported, it's probably 8 or 10 times this amount. 13,600 deaths from the vaccine. And in all 20 years of the war against terrorism in Iraq, in Afghanistan, we've lost 10,000 Americans, and we could lose a couple hundred more because of Biden's shameful retreat. But where are the people sounding the alarm about the vaccine? There's a few more reports. If you've been paying attention, we haven't been able to cover it much here because of all that's been going on in the Middle East the last couple of weeks. But you're getting a few more reports. You're coming out of Israel, coming out of Britain, that the vaccine is not keeping people out of the hospital with COVID. They're getting the double jab and they're getting COVID. And some are now dying. I think I had some headlines here that had been in my notes for a while. The BBC recently, is catching COVID now better than more vaccine? ABC, health experts warn not to jump the gun or line in taking a third dose. They're starting to back away. Maybe we don't need the third dose. Another one here. Well, I think that's it. There's reports coming out of New Zealand, Australia. There was a report recently in Australia saying that, you know, yeah, we actually should go back and correct the count. All those people that died with COVID, because it turns out a lot of them had some other diseases that were pretty serious. And they died really from that, not the COVID. So they're counting it a certain way with respect to the scamdemic. And then now the vaccine's in place, and they're counting it a very different way. VAERS is having to at least admit 13,000 deaths. We got to get out of Afghanistan. Too many people have died. We've got to trigger these earth-shaking events. Too many people have died. And yet still, you have prominent health officials even saying that the vaccine is perfect. It's the same deranged reasoning. Even as people are falling down dead, you leave the scene and say, this was an extraordinary success. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in. This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Herbert Armstrong often talked about the great paradox of our day. You've got all these advancements in the world of technology and even science and industry and so on. The machine age, the information age now. And yet, as he also explained, you have the corresponding evils that just continue to multiply. And that's all around us, as we've been seeing. And just covering the news on this show in recent weeks. And he said the reason for this paradox, or the reason you have all of these evils, in large part is because of modern education. He says in Missing Dimension, that doesn't necessarily mean that the knowledge produced caused the evils. It does mean that the knowledge produced, the knowledge coming out of modern education, it did not cure existing evils or prevent new evils. One thing and Tucker does it tongue-in-cheek, but one thing I enjoy when he is exposing the ignorance and the lies is he often notes, you know, how that these people are, you know, Rhodes Scholars, or they've gone to the, you know, Ivy League universities. These are smart people. Jake Sullivan's a smart individual. He's tight with Barack Obama, by the way. Susan Rice, same way. These are products of modern education, and yet listen to what they say. Listen to John Kirby say that they're not really going to benefit from all of those weapons. They're not really going to use those weapons. They can't. He really believes it. There's a lethal component to them, to the arsenal. There's a little component there that maybe could be dangerous. This is the language of a scholar. Mr. Armstrong says, what is wrong? What's wrong with our system of education? Is it wrong to acquire or possess knowledge? No, but there are two kinds of knowledge, true and false, right and wrong, good and evil. It says, in pursuit of knowledge, man has used one source, the scientific method of experimentation, discovery, and reason. He explains all of this in his book, The Missing Dimension in Sex, how that from the beginning in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve rejected God's revelation. They observed, they experimented, and then they used human reasoning. But they didn't have the right foundation. And Mr. Armstrong said, errors almost always come from a false basic premise. If it's flawed from the beginning, it doesn't matter how much scholarly language you have somewhere along the way. It doesn't matter how much human reasoning or observation or experimentation you throw in. It's going to be flawed from the beginning. Genesis 2:16, it says, "And the eternal God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die." And so our first parents were there. They were adults. They had adult bodies, but they were just brought into existence by God, the great creator God. So their minds were pretty much empty, and God started to teach them. He said, for one, you know, of every tree in the garden you can eat of it, but don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He gave them what they needed to know, the essential knowledge. He told them about the Sabbath and family. He told them everything that they needed to know about God's purpose. He had revealed the true gospel to them. And then he then allowed Satan to come into the classroom, so to speak. That happens in Genesis 3. It says, "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field." Well, you can cut to the chase there in verse 4 where Satan lies and says, you won't surely die. Look, that bad things aren't going to happen if you eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He created a false narrative, a counterfeit. Now, prior to this time, they really only had God's word to go on. God told them, you can eat from all these trees, but don't eat from this one because it's going to cause pain and suffering and death. They couldn't resist. Once Satan came along and said, look, you're not going to die. You've got an immortal soul. You've got a brilliant mind, a human spirit. Why do you need God to tell you what to do? Just decide for yourself. And of course, they did do that. They took from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the world, of course, has been taking from that tree. The tree of doing what seems right in your own eyes, and basically shutting God out of the picture. In Mystery of the Ages, it says here, "Let us realize that this was the very foundation of the world in which we still live. This is how the world started. This is how human civilization started." Now, there's a history that goes way, way back before the recreation or the refinishing of the surface of the earth and the creation of human beings. I won't take the time to get into all of that. But this is the beginning of human civilization. They rejected God and his authority. They rejected his revelation. They rejected his government. And they decided for themselves what was right and what was wrong. Verse 5 says, "For God does know that in the day that you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." You'll know. I mean, you've got the ability to observe and to experiment, and you can humanly reason your way through these things. It says, "And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat." He just meekly went along, weakly I should say, wouldn't stand up and lead, wouldn't stand up and tell his wife, "What are you doing? Why have you sinned against our Maker? Why have you sinned against the great God?" He just went right along. Mr. Armstrong says they pioneered in deciding for themselves what's right and wrong. And then he talks about that scientific method, rejecting revelation, using observation, experimentation, and then a whole lot of human reasoning. And boy, has the world been doing that ever since. This is how you explain this great paradox. all of this sophisticated technology, we're making use of some of it right here with this show. And the fact that it can just go right around the world. It can be streamed live, even, into a remote location on this earth. It's incredible. It's incredible what man has been able to create and make. There's a lot of bright people that put time and effort and experimentation and observation into creating things. God gave us a godly type mind from the very beginning. He intended for us to be creators. But he also intended for that godly type mind to join together with his mind so that we could live according to the law of love, so that we could get along with our fellow man, so that we could have a relationship with God himself, so that there wouldn't be this really obvious paradox between the development of knowledge or knowledge accumulation, knowledge production, and then all of this evil that is there because of rejecting God's government and rejecting his laws. Mr. Armstrong wrote this: "I found revealed the fact that the very foundation of education to fit one for happy and successful living is being totally ignored." Mr. Armstrong, as you know, raised up a unique college back in 1947, Ambassador College. He said that foundation is awareness of the purpose of life, knowledge of what man is, recognition of the true values as opposed to the false, and knowledge of the way which is the cause of every desired effect. He says that knowledge is the dimension that is missing in today's education. See, the great minds of today, they don't get any of that if they're going off to an Ivy League school. A Rhodes Scholar doesn't get this. A knowledge or an awareness of the purpose of life and what man is and what are the true values, the law of cause and effect, that dimension is missing. And the reason it's missing is because man has been cut off from that knowledge. Man has been cut off from God's Spirit. Read it for yourself. Verse 22, we're in Genesis 3 still. It says, "And the eternal God said, Behold, the man has become as one of us to know good and evil. And now, lest he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. Therefore, the eternal God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from whence he was taken. So he drove out the man, and he placed at the east of the Garden of Eden cherubims and a flaming sword, which turned every way to keep the way of the tree of life." God cut man off from the tree of life. And you can see in Romans 8, where it says, "The Spirit of God is life." That's what this tree represented. And God cut man off from it and said, "Okay, if you don't want my government, if you don't want my law, my love, if you don't want my Spirit, as you go about raising up educational institutions, governments, industry, science, then just do it the way you think you should do it. Just use some human reasoning." And that's what man has been doing. For 6,000 years, man's system of education has been cut off from God and his revelation. This is why the paradox. Mr. Armstrong wrote in 1965, "The future welfare and even the existence of civilization is dependent on the educational system." What has education done to solve the problems of this world, to solve the nightmare in Afghanistan, for example? Like Mr. Armstrong would say, it might not mean that education has directly caused all of this carnage, all of this suffering, but it certainly hasn't provided us with the solution. And more, you see some very highly educated individuals coming forward with solutions, quote unquote, that are killing more people. Look at the vaccine. Where is anyone that would have the courage to stand up and say, if we can just save one life, let's get rid of these vaccines, okay? They won't tell you the truth. The politicians, the scientists, a few. There's a few There's a few heartening headlines, finally. But they're too full of pride and arrogance. They can't even come out in a speech and say, you know what? We should have done it better. We should have evacuated our people first. We should, at the very least, we should have destroyed all of that military equipment. Here's what we can learn. As it is, well, you hear it. You hear it in the speeches. You hear it in the stubbornness, the hard-headedness of these leaders that want to impose their will, their communist will, on the populace. Mr. Armstrong talked about two kinds of knowledge. Notice Hosea 4. This is verse 6. It says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me, seeing you have forgotten the law of my God, of thy God. I will also forget your children. As they were increased, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame." My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. This is an end-time prophecy. There's obviously a lot of knowledge in this world today. All of this knowledge, Mr. Armstrong wrote an article back in the 60s, I believe, with a headline that said, in effect, all this knowledge and yet all this trouble. Why this paradox? Why hasn't education been able to solve the problems of this world? Listen to this statement from 1982. Mr. Armstrong said, "Today, education is actually preparing this world for a cosmicide, the blasting out of existence of all life on Earth." That's not hyperbole. That's not exaggeration. That's Matthew 24, 21, and 22. Jesus said that. Jesus said, were it not for God intervening in the affairs of man, right here in the last days, we would destroy ourselves. And listen to the kind of thinking. Even after leaving $90 billion worth of military hardware to a Taliban terrorist group, and you have a prominent spokesman here in the United States, in Washington, D.C., speaking on behalf of the Pentagon, telling you it's really not going to make much difference. It's not going to make the neighborhood more dangerous. Certainly those weapons aren't going to be turned and used on us. They'll keep saying that until the tribulation just explodes in their faces. As I was telling the students this morning, you can see why the great tribulation and the day of the Lord. Why would God allow that kind of explosion, that kind of great tribulation, to touch every corner of this earth? He has to do it to begin educating mankind in his ways. Man wouldn't pay attention in any other way, in any other scenario. We'd just continue rejecting our God and creating a false narrative, deceiving ourselves. God wants us to be doers of his word. There's cause and effect. And he says, if you do it, if you live it, if you receive the Spirit of God, if you take from the tree of life, here are the blessings and the peace and the prosperity and the security and the contentment that you will be blessed with. That time is coming, and soon, as soon as Jesus Christ returns to this earth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. This is the end of another episode of the Trumpet Daily. Send us an email, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.